Hey, ladies and gentlemen, guess what? It's the Mean Green Nation podcast. We're sort of back. Greg was supposed to be on the show today, but he had to do actual real work, so he's not on. And that's fine. I think I know the point he was going to make, and it was something like, oh, this class, what's the deal? The real class is going to start next season. he's going to be mad at me for reducing his point all the way down to that. But we're going to talk to Billy Sierra today. You might know him from GoMeanGreen.com, and I think he occasionally has written for Mean Green Nation, just giving like a recruiting update. He's everybody's favorite recruiting analyst for North Texas. I think Greg probably is the second one. But yeah, I think, I mean, it was interesting for a lot of reasons. Not only the class that he signed, and I kind of liked it, a little preview of my thoughts of it. I liked it, considering the fact that there was a short window, that we had a terrible season, and that there was a program change. So I'm expecting that better. We're gonna play better next season. It's gonna be more open, more offensive, more efficient, and good things are gonna happen, and that's gonna make it easier to recruit guys. Especially those guys that don't really buy changes based on what you did at a different program. They want to see what you do at this program. And a lot more time and development of relationships with coaches. And I think Seth Luttrell in his press conference mentioned a few of those things. He said that he went to a bunch of high schools. Sorry, my dog's over here growling. He went to a bunch of high schools, you know, introduced himself, made his face known to them, let them know that he's going to do stuff, and he even listened to them give him advice, which I wonder how serious he was about that. You know, like, he's like, oh, well, you know, I like going, and they had lots of advice, and I sit down, and I was getting advice from them. That's all good stuff, but I just wonder how many times he had to hear suggestions on how to do things that maybe weren't so great, but he listened to them anyway just because he has to develop this relationship. That kind of stuff is interesting to me, guys. Yeah, he went to a lot of high schools around here that he was able to, considering I think there was a contact ban there for a while. But he's going to have a whole year to do it again, and I think that he'll make a lot more inroads. He'll get a better idea of what he has, of the lay of the land around here in Oklahoma. I think he kind of focused on Oklahoma a bit. So we'll get a good idea of what he can do, how he can recruit when he has a full year. I think he did a decent job, though, in this time frame, and that's good. A couple of notes from his presser that stood out. I think he said, like, he didn't like watching just the highlight tape. He's like, anybody can make a decent high school tape. He wants to see the good and the bad, and it gives you a nice sense of how they can play, what they can do. I think it's good. I mean, I don't know anybody that thought that they were just looking at highlight tapes anyway, but it's good to hear him say that. And he says they're going to recruit the best QBs in the country and that they needed more depth, and especially at the linebacker position. I think those two things are super interesting, and we're going to get to those later. We might as well just get started right away. Let me bring in Billy so we can start discussing this 2016 North Texas signing day class. All right, Billy, let's get right down to it. What did you think of the class? Like, your just overall impression of it, good or bad or otherwise?
My overall impression is that, you can't talk about the class without talking about the time crunch. And, you know, you also don't want to make excuses, but at the same time, you have to acknowledge the fact that the guy did, he didn't have much time to work with. You know, that being said, it wasn't bad at all. I think there are definitely a few players who stand out. Guys like Nick Smith from Arlington Martin, my alma mater, and then Rico Bussey, the receiver from Oklahoma. And then also, of course, getting the big junior college pickup was William Johnson, linebacker from Arizona Western, former Nebraska commit. So there's some talent. There's some talented guys, and you know, looking back at some of the other classes, you know, yesterday we were kind of going over things on the board, and I went over the 2010 class, which was mainly the main guys from the 2013 bowl team, and they only had three guys who really, you know, stood out as high school prospects, stood out as guys who were recruited fairly decently, but all three of those guys ended up being all conference. So that was huge. You know, if you can get three all conference guys from one class, you know, you're set right there. You know, those guys can be building blocks for the team. You know, not to say that, you know, we should expect that out of anybody, but at the same time, you know, we don't have to have necessarily a huge class for it to work out great, as long as you hit on those guys. And that's going to be key, and time will tell from that standpoint. But you know, it's definitely setting up nicely, especially going forward with next class. You've got a big, you've got a lot of spots left in next class. So I think the plan will be to kind of fill those gaps with next class, with the quantity that we're going to have, hopefully 25-plus spots. And then hopefully get quantity next class and really focus on the quality with these guys that we're bringing in right now.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have hated it if he got bodies in just to get bodies. But the problem with that is that you don't know who you're going to get. If you don't have the time to properly vet each and every one of these guys, and you don't know exactly how they'll fit in, as best you can, because all of this is somewhat of a crapshoot. I mean, you're kind of looking at high school kids and trying to predict how they're going to be when they're 22. But you could do your team more harm than good if you're just taking a lot of flyers. You can take one or two, and hopefully your program culture can absorb them, you know, especially, you know, everybody like to bag on like Carlos Harris and things. But you're going to get those kinds of guys in, guys that are like passionate, this, that, and the other. But if your overall program culture is greater than that kind of person that you're bringing in, and maybe doesn't fit so well, you can absorb it. But if you're just taking flyers on guys that are, we'll call them edge cases, then it kind of ruins the whole stew there a little bit. So what I'm saying is I agree that I don't mind that it was a small class, and I kind of expected it to be a small class. Like I said before, I said it pretty much everywhere. I like this class, especially considering the circumstances. As you said, limited time frame. And he was aiming to kind of fill some spots. He was kind of, I think somebody called it speed in need, but I think they just like saying speed in need. Best case scenario, I always like to quote Dan McCarney's nephew, Dan McCarney, who's now a writer for the NBA. He says, you know, Dan McCarney. He says, you know, like, you get a class of 25 guys, you're hoping a third are like your all-conference guys, a third are contributors, guys that start or regularly contribute, and then the rest, you know, they're probably just not going to play, they're just going to, you know, flush out of the program, but you're hoping you get something from there. So as you said, you know, you kind of pointed out, we got three good guys in that 2010 class, three all-conference guys, you know, and then, you know, the rest, they contributed here and there. That's what you're hoping for. You're hoping that Nick Smith, that Rico Bussey, that Will Johnson are all-conference types. I mean, let's go ahead and say it. That's what we want. We want from them to be all-conference types. Whether they are or not, you don't know. But from the rest, if we can get, you know, the three other starters from there, like solid starters, they don't need to set any records, but just solid guys, then this is a, you know, an A-plus kind of recruiting class, especially considering the circumstances. I know Greg, I'm kind of speaking for him. He couldn't be here today because he's actually doing real work, real paying work. But he says that he's not really high on this class. And what do you say to the people that are like, man, this could have been better?
Yeah, I kind of broke it down on the board on Gomen Green yesterday. Basically, I have this offer list scale, for those who aren't familiar. It breaks down recruits based on their offer list, and it's actually inspired by Mr. Godecker himself. It's a grade letter scale. So basically what I have is a C is kind of the baseline. That's if we get a guy who doesn't have any other offers. We are his only FBS offer. Might have an FCS offer here, you know, D2 offer there, but you know, for the most part we were the only people who projected to play on the FBS level. So that's a C guy. A C plus guy is one other offer exactly. I know it sounds like a kind of a small criteria, but you'd be surprised how many guys fit into these little pigeonholes. But then we've got B, is B&B Plus are guys who are 3 to 5 FBS offers. Okay, yeah, sorry about that. So the B&B Plus I have is it's 3 to 5 FBS offers, and I have B Plus is a little more prestigious offers. Like I have Nick Smith there because he has a Cal and Purdue offer out of his 5. So a couple P5 programs. So, you know, something like that, you know, five solid programs, five programs that it's impressive to win recruiting battles over, or at least get guys who are offered by them at some point.
I don't know if I'd throw Purdue in there because Purdue's kind of awful, but yeah. I'll give you Cal on that one.
Yeah. When you're playing Conference USA, you still have to give some credit to P5 offers. And now at the same time, Purdue is, when you look at their recruiting ranking, they might as well be G5 at this point. But, but you know, we'll give it to them for now. They had Kyle Orton and Drew Brees, I guess. So, and then after that, I've got A is about, is 6 or more FBS offers. And then A plus is 10 or more Division I offers. You know, if a guy had 10 Division I offers or more, he's got a pretty solid chance to be a good player on this level, especially if he can, you know, a guy like that, you're just hoping to keep him on the field and keep his grades in order, keep his ego in order, and if that can happen, you're usually looking at a pretty good shot at a good player there. But, so I broke it down like that, and I compared it to McCarney's first class and some of his other classes, and I did a percentage breakdown, and the guys who were B and better, and I think it was about 56% were B or better from this class, which is not a bad percentage. McCarney's first class was only 39%, so McCarney's first class was kind of quantity over quality, I should say. There were a bunch of guys that were kind of brought in that were not necessarily legitimate FBS prospects at the time of their recruitment, but were brought in to kind of build a foundation, and some of those guys worked out better than others, but again, I think the quantity wasn't bad in this class, breakdown wasn't bad, but again, it's unfortunate that it was so small. So we'll see going forward. I think that shows that Coastal Trail does have a good grasp on making sure that he's bringing in the right guys and not just bodies for the sake of you know, having a filled out roster.
Yeah, I mean, he mentioned that it was kind of interesting that he looked at the QB depth chart, which has guys, right? It has bodies, but I think he mentioned that, you know, he wanted depth on the QB roster, and to me that says something like, yeah, you had guys, but they're not ready for this level. And again, if you have 3 guys that can play, that's, you know, that's your depth chart. If you have 10 guys and only 3 guys can play, you still only have 3 guys. You know what I mean? So it doesn't matter if you have more dudes there. Yeah. I agree with the filling out thing. I'd like to get 25 guys that can contribute, that have a reasonable shot of playing. But that was always going to be the case, that it's going to happen next year. Anyway. I think we had a question on the Twitter, and it was basically the same thing. Like, who's your favorite prospect? And I guess that's for you, Nick Smith.
Yeah, it has to be. And I think I can say that at least to a degree without bias, just based on what I've said in the past about offer lists. I think his Rico Bussi actually had a better offer list in terms of numbers. He had over 10 Division I offers, so he did fit that A plus criteria. But I think I'm high on him too. But Nick Smith, I think, you know, he's a guy who he's a very established back. Again, you know, he went to my high school, and what I've gathered from him, you know, the running back I played with my senior year, the guy I grew up with, his name was Denzel Williams, and he ended up signing with OU, and Nick Smith broke his record for most points scored in AISD history. That was referenced on signing day, and that was a record when my teammate broke it that had held for about 50 years. So that was an impressive record at the time. And then Nick came in and broke it. He was playing as a freshman next to Kyle Hicks, who's currently on TCU, was back in Aaron Green, probably gonna be a starter next year. So he's played, you know, played with good teammates, or he's played with some impressive teams and still stood out. He's been the leading rusher there for, you know, the last 3 years. He's been a starter for 4 years. He's a pretty complete back. He's got a lot of good traits. He's got good speed. I think he's pretty much up there with Wilson and Ivory in terms of speed. I think he's somewhere in between, a little bit less than Ivory, but maybe a little bit more just straight line speed than Jeffrey Wilson. He's got good cutting ability. I think he's a guy who, you know, when you're just projecting just purely based on ability on the field, he is for the most part a can't miss CSA prospect. You know, at the same time, you never know what happens with other factors. You know, to my knowledge, he's a good kid, but again, you know, I like his ability to project on this level just based on just his the whole package that he brings. And again, there's a reason why, you know, schools like Cal offered.
Yeah. I think, I mean, he's obviously one of the more impressive guys. I think between him and Rico Blessy or even Will Johnson. But I think I'm going to go just kind of off the beaten path just so I don't say the same thing everybody else says. I like that we got Mason Fine because he was only 5'10". He's a little bit undersized, and he fits the system. Mostly because it led to the quote that size doesn't matter, that he doesn't care if he's 5'10", even if he could play. I think it was a Vito that asked him that at the press conference. Asked Seth Luttrell. Like, I mean,
it was hard. It was hard to tell who was asking the questions there.
They really should mic up the crowd so we can hear who's saying things. But yeah, he that was a big issue on the message boards, on Twitter, on Mean Green Nation. Everybody was talking about that Dan McCarney's preoccupation with. Sorry, it's early, folks. Preoccupation with size. Like, he wanted a 6'4", 6'5", quarterback to stand in the pocket. You know, like it's 1992 out here. And maybe, you know, like we had a bunch of size on the roster, but maybe not the best talent. And so I like that quote. I like Seth Luttrell saying, this kid could play, and we don't care that he's 5'10". We don't care that he's, you know, what is it, 170 pounds or something like that?
Somewhere around there.
Yeah. And also, like, that I was right about my prediction. I was like, we're going to get a transfer, either a JUCO guy or a transfer, and then we're going to get a high school guy. That was my initial feeling about Seth Luttrell's initial class. And I was right. So anytime I'm right, I feel good about myself, and that's kind of what I feel like today.
Yeah, that's what we're all here for.
That's the best sign. I also like Alec Morris. Like I said, I feel like everybody thinks he's going to be the starter. Obviously, we have to see what happens, barring injury. But I don't really see anybody else outplaying him, you know, especially if he's somewhat familiar with the system or can just run the system. How about you? Do you have any day one predictions about the quarterback race? It's everybody's favorite race, by the way.
Yeah, first off, real quick on Mason Fine. Sure. One thing that I always say with the guys who are under recruited, there are two things that I'm okay with guys who don't have a lot of other offers or any other offers really. I'm okay if it's because they're undersized but they can play. You know, they're good football players. If you're going to bring in a guy like that, at least have him be a good football player. And then second is that the other thing is kind of lack of exposure. And he played at a small school. I think his size was more of an issue than anything. But if it's a guy playing at a small school who, doesn't have college coaches coming through his practices, then, you know, it kind of explains why schools hadn't been on him. But again, you know, he fits that as far as, you know, a legitimate excuse. And again, you know, I don't mind, because we've brought in guys who, like you said, at quarterback who maybe were not, who haven't panned out very well. And again, it was the same thing where, you know, Coach McCarney had this weird idea that he could get these guys with the prototypical size, but not have to out recruit anybody for them. It's like, if you're getting a dude who's a 6'4" quarterback or a 6'4" receiver, 6'6" offensive lineman, if you're getting these guys and you're their only offer, or you know, you had to beat out Louisiana Monroe to get them, then that kind of tells you a little bit to their actual playing ability. So again, you know, the fact that he can play, you know, that that gives them a chance. You know, I'm okay with that because of that factor. But yeah, and then going forward with the quarterback race, I think it's good for Alec Morris in that you know, he's the only guy who's probably going to compete for the quarterback job who was brought in by the staff. That's a good head start for him. And then also, you know, he doesn't have to learn. He's learning the same system that the guys who are already here are. So they don't have a leg up just because they've been here longer. And yeah, I do think he's going to start. You know, DeMarcus Smith is probably the most legitimate candidate besides him. He's got a shot too. He's also, you know, in a wide open offense, it is nice to have a quarterback who can move around a little bit, who can make plays with his feet. So he does have a shot. But again, I think Morris is kind of, I think he's going to kind of fit that mold as a guy who just is a good distributor of the football, a guy who knows the plays, knows the offense, you know, can make throws, but again, just really has a good grasp on what's going on out there.
Yeah, I want to make another point. Those are all good points, by the way. I want to make another point about, like, the ranking system. I think it's good because it's basically like a peer review system. There are a lot of good coaches out there, a lot of talent evaluators out there. And so, for the most part, you know, on aggregate, if a guy is desired by multiple coaches and multiple programs, then he probably has something. You know, you can confirm that. And the times where you miss that, it needs to be a special circumstance kind of thing. Like you mentioned with Mason Fine, small school, maybe undersized. But you feel like there's something there and you can coach him up or something. And, you know, and like other programs maybe are not so willing to take a chance on him. But you got to be able to – you have to know that you can develop him or you can kind of do something with it. And that's the thing that also Dan McCartney didn't really do. We didn't see the most development, especially in the quarterback position. And I think we all think that Seth Luttrell is going to do a better job of that. He mentioned that also. But then again, so did Dan McCartney about developing some of these guys, looking forward to developing them, that it's all about development. You know, I just want to make that point again, that it doesn't matter how good of a guy you get in. If they don't develop or they don't, you know, turn into what they could be, they don't realize their potential, it's not always on the player. Some of that's on the coaches. A lot of that's on the coaches, I think. So that's going to be the next step. And I think there's some guys with some talent on the roster, on McCartney's, you know, leftover roster, that still have room to develop. You know, T-Goree, some of these other guys that came in, showed some promise, have some talent. I'd like to see what Seth Luttrell does with them. And that'll give us a nice inkling into the future with this class of 16, with the class of 17, and so on and so forth. But yeah, I agree with you. I think Alec Morris is going to be the starter. You know, barring DeMarcus Smith showing out, I think that's possible. But we'll see. We'll see. Any other highlights? What do you think about some of the other signings? Some of the Will Johnson. You want to talk a little bit more about him?
Yeah, Will Johnson. It sounds like we're going to be going out of this 4-2-5 base scheme. So I think two linebackers, and then a third guy is kind of going to be more of a that fifth defensive back is going to be kind of more of a rover linebacker safety hybrid than another corner or another more traditional defensive back. So then you're going to have I think Will Johnson is going to be probably one of those two linebackers in the box. He's got good size. He's got good speed. I mean, he's a playmaker. I think he had 74 tackles last year, something around there. So he's a good rangy guy. You know, with only two linebackers in the box, you need guys who can both. So Will Johnson, I think he's going to be one of the two inside guys. And again, I'm interested to see where the current guys on the roster fit. Brandon Garner is a guy who really intrigues me. He had a decent year as a redshirt freshman last year. He had a big hit in the Iowa game. I think when he was on the field, he did about as good a job as any of our other linebackers. But he's also a guy who can play outside of the box. They had him outside of the box quite a bit when he played. So I think he might fit that hybrid role, that kind of rover role, to be a bit of a safety linebacker hybrid. And then The other guy they brought in was Edgy Ajayi, from Arizona Western, who he's going to be the same thing. He's a oversized safety linebacker type guy who's he can move. He's he's kind of tall and angular, so he can hopefully get in the way in the pass lanes. And so that's probably. And then the rest of the guys on the roster, I think again it's going to be interesting to see where they project. Probably the smaller, more slender linebackers like Seth Ellis and Calvin Miner might also potentially fit in that hybrid role. And then you're going to have guys like Fred Scott and Courtney Finney fighting it out for that other inside linebacker position. So, I think Will Johnson, he could be a starter. It's going to be hard because he's going to be coming in the fall instead of the spring. But I think he fits that mold about as good as anyone we have on our roster right now. So, that was big. I think the big thing with any May graduate JUCO is that you just want their grades to be in order. You want them to get on campus because you're kind of playing with fire by getting a lot of those guys, which Coastal Trail's going to need most, if not all, of those guys to get here. So we'll see. Hopefully they're squaring away those grades. But again, I think if he gets here, he's he's a immediate impact guy. And then some of the other guys on our recruiting class, there's the kid from DeSoto, Kyrie Muhammad. He's a potential dark horse for me, especially for the fact that he plays safety, and we didn't sign a safety last year or this year beside him. So I think he's got a good shot on the depth chart if he can develop. He seems like kind of a late bloomer. I think he was related to Bryce English, I think, from DeSoto. So he's another radar guy. Typically, I'm not the biggest fan of under the radar guys from the power high schools. I think that's often not a good sign, just because if they're coming from a power high school like DeSoto, they've had dozens of college coaches see them, whether directly or indirectly, practice or whatever during games
or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So, so the fact that Weir's only offer is a little bit, disconcerting, but at the same time, he does look like he's got some decent traits. He's got decent speed. His size is, he's not a huge guy, but I think he's got about 5'11", so he's got a bit of a frame to grow into. And then I think, again, the depth chart is going to work in his favor right now. I think all of our little underclassmen safety on our roster, so that should help. And then Tyler Wilson, also from Arlington Martin, I think he was an electric return man. He averaged like about 42 yards a kick return this year in high school, and I think we've got an open spot there in both return spots. So he could fill that role as far as being an immediate playing time guy. And
yeah, we lost Trey Johnson. I mean, I forget what exactly, because
right.
he was a walk on, and he took the spot. He returned a touchdown against UTEP, and he left the team. So if it was open and we had a walk on returning kicks, I mean, I think that spot is very wide open. So that's
right. And then Kidsey's kind of the other return man.
Yeah, but then Kidsey won. He lost his spot like already. I mean,
yeah.
It was like early in the season. I think it was against Rice that he was fumbling again. Still, so and then he has his legal trouble. So who knows what's gonna happen? Sorry, I interrupted you. What else were you gonna say, man?
Oh no, yeah. Again, I just think that return spot's up for grabs, and Wilson is he's a likely candidate, but he's certainly not the only one. I don't know that Bussey returned kicks, but he's got good speed. He could be a guy there right off the bat, and then certainly some of the other guys already on our roster, like Willie Ivory. The other guy, not in this recruiting class, but DeAndre Bradley. I don't know exactly what's up there. He left, and then they're saying he might be coming back. He was our kick returner most of the year last year, so we'll see what goes on there. But again, those are two open spots, definitely up for grabs for anybody, new guys, old guys, whoever. And then another guy I liked in the class is Chandler Anthony, the tackle out of Oklahoma. He's a big guy. 6'6", 6'7". Had an offer from Memphis at some point. He was a decent looking prospect, and And again, I think we've got a decent offensive line, so I think he's more of a long-term guy. I think he's looking at a red shirt behind some of the guys like Jordan Murray and Chris Miles. But that's another pickup that I'm a pretty big fan of.
Yeah, I would say you can't have too many offensive linemen, especially good offensive linemen. So, yeah, any more of those, please. I was a little concerned that we didn't really fill out the defensive line. For me, a big concern was how easily they were pushed around last season. They were undersized across the board. And, you know, the hope is that those young guys that we had will fill out a bit over the off season, but you can't rely on that. It'd be nice to get a guy with size, even a JUCO guy. We didn't see that. But, again, that's not unexpected. It wasn't unexpected because considering the small window, one thing that will be interesting to look at, I'm not exactly sure what UTSA is going to do. Now they got a new coach there. They're going to change their defensive system. But they've had success with it, so I expect they'd probably keep it around or a version of it. But that makes, what, three Conference USA schools at least that run a 4-2-5. Southern Miss, UTSA, and now us. And we're kind of late to the game. You know, so it'll be interesting, like, you know, to see exactly how we battle for some of these same type guys, the Rover guys, the Whip guys, rangy linebacker types. That will be very interesting to see, I think, going forward. The other thing is that, like, you know, you're talking about the depth on the linebacker spot. We have guys. That's another thing that we had. We had guys, but they were a little bit slow. Some of that was, you know, they were trying to get off blocks a lot because, you know, the defensive line was getting blasted open, but Seth Littrell called it an area of need. He said, we didn't really have guys at linebacker. We were looking at that. We didn't really have the guys we needed. So that's interesting. It's another case of maybe you have guys on the roster, but not a whole lot of guys that he thinks can play. Any other thoughts before we let you go? I know you got to get to the next stage of your day.
Yeah. I think, it's real. I guess we can talk about the tight ends a little bit. There was kind of a little Scott Sidway, the NT Daily guy, wrote a piece for the WFAA about our signing class and said that he was hearing that there was going to be a phase out of the tight end position on our roster. So I think that's interesting. You look at the guys we have at tight end, we don't have very many. And one thing I was kind of saying before that came out is Seth Littrell himself hasn't come out and said that, but to me, he has in a way in that when you look at the tight ends on our roster, we have three guys who've never really played a meaningful down. Two guys are coming off red shirts, and the fact that he went so JUCO heavy everywhere else, but didn't bother to even recruit a JUCO tight end told me that he didn't care about getting production out of that position. So you look at the current guys on our roster, I think, Kelvin Smith. He's about 6'3", 235, 240-ish, so he could maybe fit that H-back kind of role. And then you got Wiley Reinhardt, who's a bigger guy. I think he's around more 6'4", 260. And then Kevin Dillman, of course, he's about 6'4", 250. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with those guys. I think Kelvin Smith, yeah, he could maybe be that H-back type guy. I don't know how much Littrell uses that, to be honest. I know he didn't use his tight ends a whole lot at North Carolina. I think he had a tight end have like 200 yards receiving this year and like 200 the year before. So obviously not very much, but you know, it'll be interesting to see if he even needs a guy like that at all going forward. And then Wiley Reinhardt, he might be an O-line convert. He might be maybe a new defensive line guy. His strength is his you know, his blocking ability as a tight end. He wasn't a receiver, so he's not going to be a pass catching threat going forward with his offense. And then Dillman's the wild card. I think people have been talking about it. Maybe giving him a shot at quarterback. You know, it's hard to really see why they wouldn't at this point, because I don't know that he fits anywhere else, but. You know, it's going to be interesting going forward with that tight end position. Do they want at least one kind of tight end role guy where they can have him, you know, a guy, you know, it's kind of interesting to me to think of this offense without any guys who can, you know, kind of block in space as far as, you know, a big guy, a guy who can, you know, a full, you know, a guy you can motion in the backfield and get on the, you know, on the play side and get that edge blocked or just different things. It's hard to think of an offense with just receivers blocking. I know Tech made it work, so maybe that is what Latrell's going towards. But I think that's probably going to be the biggest difference from, you know, this offense to from McCarney's, because McCarney's, geez, I mean, some of the times we had 3-4 tight ends on the field, it seemed like.
Yeah, I know.
Backfield on the line.
Yeah, we had we split out Marcus Smith and, you know, have him drop a pass out there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot of this is kind of going to some of that Todd Dodge era roster makeup when I know a lot of guys on the board would say, we need a tight end out there. Somebody get under center and get a tight end, as if that would solve all our problems. You know, like, I mean, there have been some high-powered offenses with lots of tight ends and high-powered offenses with very few tight ends. It's really how you play it. Mike Leach and a lot of the air raid guys they eschew the tight end position. They kind of have like an H-back, like maybe one guy, like you mentioned, maybe Kevin Dillon kind of gets in there. One guy that's mostly a tight end, but he'll go out there and do some blocking and kind of fill that H-back role in situational situations. Is that really what I was going to say? But basically be a situational guy, yeah. It's still early, ladies and gentlemen. I'm totally fine with that as long as we're moving the ball up and down the field. You know, if we're getting the ball out to these receivers at pace, at speed, and eating up chunks of yards, then we don't need a tight end. You know, but if we're like, if there'll be occasions where we will need to get a yard, get 2 yards, but I still don't think spreading out is an awful way to achieve that goal. You just got to be good at it. You do whatever you're going to do, just be good at it, is what I always say. You can ask anybody, I always say that. But yeah, that's an interesting thing. I think a lot of the old school type people that were really big fans of McCarney's pro style kind of offense are going to miss the tight end and the pounding it between the tackles. But I don't think it's a big problem considering that we had the worst offense in North Texas history last couple years. Last 2 years, like right near the worst that we've had in the last 6-7 years. So it'd be nice to see a change. And if that means no tight ends, hey, no tight end.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I don't care who's out there. I don't care which, what kind of personnel we have. I'm fine with you. With one of the scoring points. And, I am a big component of these type of offenses, especially on the G5 level. So I think that was the right way to go all along. Todd Dodge turned off a lot of people over here from that offense, and I think hopefully Coach Latrell can show them that, hey, you can win with that offense. That offense was not the reason we lose. The scheme, the principles of that offense are not the reason why we lost. So, hopefully Latrell can prove that. I know whenever Dodge was fired, it was like everything that he did, everything that he was, we were going to do the opposite. He was inexperienced, we're going to get an experienced guy. He ran the spread, we're going to get a pro-style guy. You know, he preached offense, scoring points, we're going to get a guy who preaches defense. So, I don't think it should have been that radical. I'll keep my Rick Villarreal criticisms at that. But I think that this, he did win a bowl game, but at the same time, this is what you need to make it to that kind of, to make some noise, really. You look at the G5 teams who have made noise in the past, they have done this, or a variation. You know, Boise State, Utah with Alex Smith and Urban Meyer, Hawaii with Bolt Brennan and June Jones, TCU even with Andy Dalton and then Boise with Kellen Moore also. So, that's how you do it at this level, I think. Your wide receiver, you might have a slot receiver who's 5'10", 180, and he wasn't recruited by the school you're playing because he's too small, but you're not asking him to go block these guys. You're asking him to go make this, 6'3" linebacker miss in space. So, you know, you're giving yourself a chance. You're giving the little guy a chance, and you know, it works on all levels. Even the big schools do it. Even the big schools have success with it. So, you know, I do like the fact that we're moving to this offense. How much, you know, how drastically things change in year one, we'll see. But again, the constant thing that we're going to need is just, we're going to need improvement. We're going to need development from our roster, especially from the quarterback position. And then, you know, we're just going to need to keep building it up as things progress. However that may be, we keep getting JUCO guys cool as long as they work out. You know, hopefully get some more high school guys too to kind of get a foundation going. Yeah. But yeah, just let's just go out there and actually score points this time.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. We'll overreact to the spring game coming up next time. I think we'll all talk. Thanks, Billy. You can find Billy on the Go Mean Green message board. He is the official recruiter guy. Is that your official title, right? Official recruiter guy?
sure. As long as it's not self-proclaimed, I'll just let people call me what they will.
Cool. Yeah, so, and also on Twitter, right? You're Says Silly on Twitter.
I think it's right.
All right, cool. Well, thanks again, man. Thanks for jumping on the podcast. Appreciate your thoughts, your time, and all that. Go Mean Green.
All right, yeah. Go Mean Green.
All right, I guess there's one question that Aldo Avina on Twitter asked, and I didn't answer, and that was breakfast taco or breakfast burrito. I gotta go with a taco that I have at breakfast. I don't know. I have a weird aversion to calling it breakfast taco. It's like saying, are you gonna eat dinner food or lunch food or, you know, breakfast food? If you eat a taco at breakfast. I mean, it's. I know what it's going to come with. It's going to have, like, eggs and whatever, you know, like chorizo or something like that. It's going to be a breakfast taco, but it just sounds redundant to call it a breakfast taco. Now, I know everybody in Austin calls it a breakfast taco. I also don't like when people call it soft tacos. That's, you know, tacos are always soft, but, you know, I think everybody got introduced to them with, like, the shells and things. But anyway, that's my hot sports opinion on tacos, I guess. Yeah, thanks everybody for listening. We will be back, like I said, I think again, after the spring game, when we get some more stuff to react to, but nice build up to it. And then during the summer, not a whole lot going on. People will probably get arrested, as kids do, for, you know, various things. It's college, what are you going to do? But we're probably not going to podcast about those kinds of things. We will be blogging about it, so go to Mean Green Nation. I think Greg is coming out of his hiatus. We'll follow up with him. Yeah, he couldn't be here today. He had to do real live work that he gets paid to do, so we don't begrudge him his absence. Thanks again, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to the Mean Green Nation podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, tell your friends. If you have things to submit to us, you can send that to podcast@meangreennation.com. Follow me on Twitter, Mean Green Nation. You can follow Greg also, MGN_breakdown. Thanks, ladies and gentlemen. Go Mean Green.